flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Each above love star diamond comes with a diamond viewing scope to see the star for yourself. Engagement ring prices start at just $29.99. They also have the Diamond Essentials collection, as well as the Love's Crossing Diamond Necklace. Also, another hot item while supplies last are the 2-carat lab-grown diamond tennis bracelets. One of the hottest gifts going on right now. Those start for just $7.99. You can also check out the Love You to the Moon and Back pendant. It's a beautiful diamond necklace for just $129. It's the perfect way to say I love you forever. Again, with every purchase of $99 or more, you get a dozen fresh roses and a box of chocolates to go with it. Also at Robert Irwin Jewelers, they got great financing options like 12 months interest-free financing, or you can take up to 60 months to pay. Shop early for the best selection. Bigger, brighter diamonds, all at better prices at Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. When we come back, we get into the list. Jason Smith also coming up during hour number 2. Stick around and listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Justin Tucker. Ugh. This is according to ESPN's write-up of an earlier report from the Baltimore Banner. Ravens kicker Justin Herbert is accused of inappropriate sexual behavior by 6 massage therapists in the Baltimore area, according to an investigation by the Baltimore Banner. Tucker's conduct caused some therapists to refuse to work with him again and resulted in 2 spas banning him from returning, according to an article posted by the Banner earlier today. The allegations occurred between 2012 and 2016, which were Tucker's first 5 seasons in the NFL. About an hour after the Banner's article was posted, Tucker called the allegations, quote, unequivocally false in a lengthy response on social media. Throughout my career as a professional athlete, I have always sought to conduct myself with the utmost professionalism. I've never before been accused of misconduct of any kind, and I have never been accused of acting inappropriate in front of massage therapists or during massage therapy sessions or during other body work. In his post, Tucker said that the article, quote, takes innocuous or ambiguous interactions and skews them so out of proportion that they are no longer recognizable. This is a desperate tabloid fodder, end quote. Tucker could be subject to discipline under the NFL's conduct policy. We became first aware of the allegations from the reporter investigating the story as they were not previously shared with the NFL, league spokesman Brian McCarthy said. We take any allegations seriously, and we will look into the matter. This is my favorite part. Also, the Baltimore Ravens, quote, we take any allegations of this nature seriously,
and will continue to monitor the situation, end quote. So, again, it's all allegations. It does not appear so far that there are legal, like no one is, I believe, sued Justin Tucker. Now, some people will say, well, this is the beginning of a lawsuit. I mean, my whole deal is like, again, if proven true, like he deserves all the hell that Deshaun Watson got or whatnot. But then kind of my other reaction was, I wonder when he was first made aware, because just because it was published today doesn't mean that he didn't find out that people started digging around and whatnot. Like, I was almost wondering, like, does this line up with his slump? Like, the guy that's been the most accurate kicker his entire career, all of a sudden out of nowhere, like, and he said, like, hey, it wasn't a mechanics issue, whatnot. Like, that was my first thought, is like, are those two things related?
Yeah, he made 73% of his kicks this year. Previously, over a long, illustrious storied career, he had never made fewer than 82%. And with kicking being such a mental game, you got to wonder, were these allegations looming on his mind? Nasty stuff that's alleged. And I'll say this. People think these reports just surface willy-nilly and that news outlets just run with anything that comes across their email. Typically, though, when something like this comes out, it has been vetted and worked on for weeks, if not months, and there were multiple lawyers involved by the publication. I can't speak to the vetting process at the Baltimore Banner specifically, but people think that you get a phone call alleging this, and then you run with a story online 20 minutes later. That's not how it works. This would have been vetted rigorously by attorneys and by editors at the Baltimore Banner. So, I mean, Justin Tucker's fighting back, but I feel quite confident that the Banner doesn't come out with this story if they don't have a pretty good amount of corroborating witnesses to back it up.
Yeah, again, at the minimum, what Justin Tucker did at least made massage therapists feel wildly uncomfortable. Now, I also have a brain and can say there's a difference between that and a crime. Like, I do.
Right.
But he's also, he hasn't been arrested. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I guess another thing, because I do totally agree with your point of, I don't think people realize sometimes how hard it is to get something like this published, particularly with how litigious society has become. I mean, I remember we, right after Laramie Tunsil had the gas mask, the draft night, I mean, we basically got the name of who leaked it, but in the end, the lawyers at Yahoo and Rivals killed it because they're like, you don't have... We had people telling us on background, we did enough independent research to be like, that's the guy, it fit the entire profile, but basically because we didn't have someone saying, on the record, in quotes, it's this guy, we couldn't publish.
100%. And the Baltimore Banner isn't some massive budget operation. They're kind of a local startup news organization. I mean, comparable to the Daily Memphian, an organization that started up because the local paper had fallen off. And, you know, they're just trying to scrape by, right? So they're not going to stake their entire reputation on something if it's not legit. Now, to what extent is it provable? Could there have been mistakes made along the way that could leave them exposed to a defamation lawsuit like Justin Tucker is suggesting? Maybe, but
what did the AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, remember they got like something wrong in the one of those Georgia reports, and then Georgia acted like complete vindication. It was like one minor detail. They got a number, like it should have been, instead of like the number 24, it should have been 18. Like it was, it was not as if they proved the allegations wrong and that like, no, they just got like one detail wrong.
Yeah, in our society, you fight back. Justin Tucker's going to fight back on this. I don't blame him. I mean, this is alleged against you, and you think you have a chance to fight it or disprove it, by all means. He's got the resources to make that fight.
It's whatever. It's out in the public, and he's going to be taking a beating. I just keep thinking about, so he went to Westlake in Austin, and he was there.
Factory.
He was there with Nick Foles, and one of my buddies, good friends from college, went to school with them at Westlake. And I just remember the guy telling me, Nick Foles is like the nicest guy you could ever meet. And then, of course, the follow-up was, BDN? He's like, oh, yeah, it's true. And he's like, speaking of that, Justin Tucker's one. Like,
so there you go.
You know what I mean? Sometimes you hear, and again, hey man, like that's one person's opinion and whatnot, but it's like that kind of stuff always kind of sticks with you.
Well, you know what? People probably would say things about me from high school. And I hope they wouldn't be a reflection on the 30-something-year-old me, you know?
Yeah,
people can grow, Jeffrey. People can change.
I agree, but I don't know. I always just kind of took that of like, because like everyone that's always been around Nick Foles has always been like, you realize like he's the nicest guy ever. Like everyone always says that. And it's like, I'll say this. I'll be interested to see how many character witnesses come up for Justin Tucker.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that one will be fascinating to see it play out. If you're the Ravens, you know, he's 35. Maybe you just say, we had a good run. See ya.
Because that's the other thing. Like, the Ravens have been pretty high and mighty that ever since the Ray Rice thing, we've always done the right thing. I've always just, like, always, my PR advice to any time any organization tries to thump their chest on the morality, I always just want to be like, you do realize who's in your locker rooms, right? Like, why would you ever do, like, if you're going to be successful, there are going to be some questionable characters. Why would you just open yourself up to that?
No, absolutely. And if he were at peak performance in his prime, maybe you ride with him, right? It's a results-based business, and you can find kickers a dime a dozen out there. So, I mean, just not Justin Tucker quality kickers, but is Justin Tucker quality kicker?
Yeah, I mean, in this year, I don't know. That was one of those ones like, ooh, boy, bad day to be Justin Tucker. SEC basketball. All right, so I know you. I mean, you and I have talked about how loaded the league is. I mean, when you go back and you look, I think right now at KenPom, their 21 plus conference rating. I think I went back as far as you could. I've never seen a league with that rating. Again, season's not over. But I was thinking about this. Auburn and Alabama are separating themselves a little bit from the pack. Now, the way schedules work, like you can't always just say like, all right, just because they're ahead right now, they'll always be ahead. Like, because I want to say Auburn's schedule's backloaded. I think like of their final five games, all five are against teams that would have been like the presumptive top five in the league. So there's chances for losses. So I'll start there. If you had to predict today, what is the number of losses that wins the league? They play 18 conference games for those that don't know.
Yeah, first of all, it's wildly impressive that Auburn is 7-0 in the league, that they've managed to survive to this point, even while missing Jahni Broome for a couple of them, to be unbeaten after playing Tennessee and Mississippi State and Texas and Missouri. And, you know, but they do run into some more difficult games later on in the schedule, as you mentioned. I think they're going to be 15-3. That's my projection for Auburn, which in this league is ridiculous. That would get them to Selection Sunday or to the SEC tournament at 27-4. And Bruce Pearl, man, like, should probably be coach of the year. We did a dribble handoff today on it, and I went with Tom Izzo because he's having an amazing year at Michigan State. But if Auburn gets through the SEC at 15-3, he's my national coach of the year. And then, yeah, but there's no guarantee of that either. Like, they could get into a little bit of
all it takes is just a little stretch of bad play.
Yeah, no doubt. You get picked off, and they've had some close calls. It's not like they've just been beating people to a pulp. So, but the fact that they've done what they've done with Jahni Broome, without Jahni Broome, they're so deep. They're so good on both sides of the floor. 15-3 is my final call on Auburn.
Okay. So then the next question that I have for you. Obviously, it's somewhat team dependent because of non-conference portions or whatnot. But what do you think will be the floor of number of SEC teams, number of SEC wins a team needs to get to the tournament?
Well, it's interesting right now because you look at it, Auburn undefeated, Alabama one loss. Then you have Florida, Missouri with two losses. And then you have Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, all there with three.
I think
three.
There's There's six teams with either three or four losses.
It gets jumbled up in a hurry with teams that are going to – there's going to be one or two games separating the last double bye, that fourth seed that gets you into the quarterfinals automatically of the SEC tournament. There's going to be one or two games separating that team and a team that has to play on the first day and win five games in 5 days as the number nine seed in the SEC tournament. So, I mean, I think there's a scenario where that four seed – I mean, the number I was on earlier is 13-5, but – 12-6, man. That could get you the fourth seed if you're in a tiebreaker scenario there.
Well, and that also begs this question. If you are, like, let's say you're a team, because, like, it's entirely possible you're a team that doesn't have a double bye, and you could be probably a top five seed. You know, there's only four teams that get a double bye, and I think at this point it's highly likely at least, what, three teams are probably getting top two seeds?
Without a doubt. I mean, you go and look at Palm's bracketology. It's loaded. Like, half of the top four seeds are from the SEC. You got Alabama and Auburn on the one line, Florida and Tennessee on the two line. Then you got A&M on the three line with Kentucky and Mississippi State on the four. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. That's seven of your top 16 right now projected out of the SEC.
So at least three of those teams are not going to get a double bye.
Right.
Are we, like, setting up for, like, is the SEC tournament going to really just start to becoming, like, hey, which team actually cares to be here? Because if I'm the head coach and we're sitting there and we're going to have to win whatever, what would that be? Would we have to win 4 in 4 days? If I don't, well, if I'm a single bye.
Correct. Yeah. 4 in 4 days.
So four days.
If your seeds 5 through 8. Yeah.
And then potentially I could have to turn around and play next Thursday. Why am I doing that?
No, thank you. Yeah, the SEC tournament is going to be, Jay Bill has said this, and it's making the rounds. Mark Byington even mentioned it to me today when I was down at Vandy, the idea that it could be more difficult to win the SEC tournament than it would be to win the NCAA tournament. It's ridiculous, but it's potentially true if you only have a single bye or no bye at all, and you have to win 4 and 4 or 5 and 5. And there's going to be so few teams that are, it looks like, on the bubble come the SEC tournament. Right now at CBS, Texas is one of the last four in.
Yeah.
But they're really the only team from the league that is, like, hardcore on the bubble. Georgia, Vandy could end up on the bubble come SEC tournament week.
Yeah, I always say way, but leave room for teams to play themselves to the bubble, because inevitably it happens. Yeah.
No, without a doubt. Maybe Missouri could hit a rough spot and end up in that position. But it's almost to a point to me where, like, the SEC is so dominant, and the games are great to watch, but they're somewhat insignificant relative to the regular season games being played by other leagues. And I'm never the guy who says the regular season doesn't matter in the SEC or in college basketball, but in the SEC's case, they did all their work already. Their work is done. It's a survival contest now because you're in. Like, you've done it. Like, Mississippi State in years past, the loss to Alabama last night would have been devastating because we had to beat Alabama. That was one of, we only have 3 quad 1 opportunities left, and that was one of them, and we let it slip through our fingers. Oh, it's devastating. Now we're going to have to claw our way back into the tournament picture. Well, that's not the case anymore. I mean, they dropped that game, and they're still, a projected 4 seed in the NCAA tournament.
So, well, to your point, they've had 2 of those losses. The Kentucky loss at home was the same thing.
Yeah, they did so much in November and December across the board that, as you mentioned to me earlier, the worst you can play right now in the SEC is a quad 2 game. If you have LSU or South Carolina at home, that's still a quad 2. Whereas, like, Memphis is like, please give us a quad 2 game. We'll go on the road.
It's entirely possible that the Temple game that they played a week ago tonight,
last quad 2,
last one of the regular season. Yeah. I mean, I guess theoretically you could see someone in the tournament, but I guess maybe if you saw North Texas on a neutral, that would be a quad 2. And maybe Temple, because Temple counts because it was true road. Like, that might be, in terms of regular season, it's entirely possible that that is their last quad 2 game.
Yeah, and that's why the lack of a return game at North Texas is kind of a bummer, because that would be a quad 1 based on where they are at in the net. So it's like the SEC is so brutal. And you look at teams like Tennessee, Kentucky, both beat up right now. Arkansas, I think John Calipari has got to be regretting not filling out that roster with a little more depth. Because without Boogie Fland, they are scraping the bottom of the barrel just to put a quality rotation out there against the toughest league in America.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, though, that's kind of the other thing. It can kind of cut both ways, where there's not a lot of evidence to suggest that Arkansas could turn it around. But a team getting hot for 3 or 4 weeks, and then you pick up 6 wins in those 3 or 4 weeks, like, all of a sudden you go from being completely not a part of the tournament conversation to you had a really good 3 weeks and all of a sudden you're back in it. Like, this is kind of where like the league can also work for you.
Yeah, Arkansas has got to start hammering the gas pedal. And wouldn't it be hilarious if they started doing that at Kentucky on Saturday night and John Calipari's return to Rupp Arena? I don't envision it. It's hard to imagine the way Arkansas has been playing.
It's hard, but like,
that would be the plot twist of all plot twists.
One thing that we do see, and we see particularly in college basketball, it's really tough to follow up a big time win with another great performance. And like going into the artist formerly known as Thompson Bowling. What is it? Food City Center.
Food City Center.
There we go.
Yes.
Food City Center. Shorthanded like they did and coming away with that win, like that was a big time win. Like it kind of like sets up Arkansas's had the off week. They're licking their wounds. Nobody's thinking anything of them. It's like if I had a little bit more faith in Arkansas, I kind of would like this spot. But there's Arkansas really hasn't given us a lot of reason to trust them yet.
Can we also just talk about how ridiculous it is that Tennessee, ranking third in the country in college basketball attendance, plays in the Food City Center? I mean,
hey man,
give me a break, man.
Come on. Get ready for it. People down in Ole Miss fans, did you see the schools monetizing the Grove?
Oh, how so?
There's going to be a fee per game to tailgate in the Grove.
No.
Yep. Now, they didn't raise ticket prices.
Can't they just name it the John and Sandy Black Grove?
I mean, man, there's only so many people that can pay for like that's the other thing. You're probably hitting them up for whatever else you're doing. Like,
what's the camouflage company that's a big donor at Ole Miss?
Realtree.
Even after them,
I think it's Realtree.
The Grove presented by Realtree.
I mean, that's
something.
The thing though. They're already doing all the like they're doing collective stuff. Like, this is what I think. I'm very fascinated to see. This is like another thing that people are, that schools are asking the fans to fund. And, you know, like it just starts, like they're going to start monetizing everything. If you have a space, it's going to be one of two things. Either people are going to pay to use it or somebody is going to pay to sponsor it. And
that's
the problem
gross,
is,
man.
There's only so many, you know, it's the Nick Saban. There's only so many rich companies in Mississippi that want to sponsor an Ole Miss thing. Because that's the other thing. If you do business in Mississippi, well, do you have to go and spend it with Mississippi State? Do you have to do equal time?
Well, don't forget about Southern Miss.
Well, that it used to be like one-third, one-third, one-third. They have kind of worked around that.
Hey, look at Charles Huff, man. He won the Sun Belt at Marshall. He's going down to Hattiesburg to revitalize the Golden Eagles, bring it back to the Brett Favre glory days.
Listen, anything's better than what Southern Miss is right now. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk to Jason Smith. He had Ed Scott in studio. We'll get his thoughts on that interview and some Tigers tonight. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zen Sports is rolling out the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for January. The prizes are raised to a whole new level. This month, one grand prize winner will win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game and $10,000 cash, or an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. So there's just 2 days left to take advantage of this opportunity. You can earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You also have a shot to win one of five small prizes, which grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on the big game or $250 cash. Also, for all customers who sign up with code JeffTN, you'll receive 500 bonus entries in addition to the entries earned from the value of the qualifying bet. Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules, and you can earn a $100 no-danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions do apply. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. That music means we welcome to the program co-host of the Jason and John Show, Jason Smith. You can follow him on Twitter on X at JasonSmith929. Jason, you had Ed Scott in studio today. What stood out to you in your conversation with him?
Oh, I just think his willingness, and this is going to be repeat, but we've seen it. It's been refreshing since he got here 6 months ago, a transparency unlike we've seen from at least the previous two athletic directors, probably going all the way back to R.C. Johnson, who before Jeff Calkins was writing, I think probably fairly so at that point, that R.C. needed to go. I mean, you had an AD who understood, I'll put it this way, the benefit, right, of having a relationship with the media. That's not saying that you don't, that's not saying everything has to be good and everybody's on the same page. What it is understanding that, listen, they've got a job to do. We've got a job to do. Ed Scott seems to understand that too often with this Memphis program, whether it's been ADs or coaches, when the criticism to them has gotten bad or negative, I guess is a better word to use. In our case, I would say some of it, we would call it fair. They've had a tendency to sort of circle the wagons and not talk. In the end, your job is to talk to your people. For Dr. Ed Scott, it's to get believers, right? And how do you convert non-believers into believers? You do it by talking to them, by using the media as a megaphone to spread your message. And in a very, again, transparent way, Ed Scott continued to do that. He addressed, my partner's concerns about Pac-12 right off top, something I thought he had done pretty well, pretty thoroughly, just in terms of laying it out there, whether it was for Jeff or for all the media outlets, about how that was a bad deal at the time. Question for me now on the Pac-12, hey, can that deal get better? Memphis has got a football program, a basketball program, they're both ranked in the top 25, something that very few Group of Five schools can claim, and only a handful of P4s can claim. And so there's a momentum right now for Memphis that you're certainly hoping gets you somewhere. Now, with the ACC and that ESPN deal, who knows if that, if that's ever an option. But back to the point, maybe perhaps, that deal can be revisited. And Ed talked about that. Dr. Scott talked about that in terms of, listen, my phone's, it rings. And I've still been talking to the commissioner. So, if there was any news from that front, other than, yes, it was a bad deal and remains one, it was that those two, hopefully will continue to talk. And maybe if we're talking about, realignment at some point for Memphis or jumping up, it's down the line with a better deal from the Pac-12. But other than that, talked about his coaches, a lot of repeat from what we learned through Jeff and his three pieces early in the week. But again, what stood out is the way he deals with the common sense approach and the transparency that, again, I tell you, we hadn't seen in a while. Refreshing is the word, Jeffrey.
Jason, do you think the new administration with Ed Scott and Tim Duncan, do you think that they're benefiting Penny Hardaway and the men's basketball program, that program is in a healthier place because of that new administration?
There's no question about it. I do. I believe that Cobb and we got more evidence. And as far as I'm concerned, from Dr. Scott today, he talked a little bit about, what he's done in his 6 months in terms of working with Penny. And a lot of it sounded like, the departments had quite a bit to do with it, not just Dr. Scott, but with Penny, whether it's taking small bits of advice like, hey, my team wasn't ready to play. Well, the immediate next question, Dr. Scott went into this from the media, is going to be, well, why not? Instead of understanding that off top, all they really want to hear the way you play this game is, hey, I didn't have my team ready to play. Small things like that. But more importantly, I think the larger thing, Cobb, is that having Penny comfortable enough to listen. Penny, the successful NBA basketball player, should be Hall of Fame one day. Penny, the signature shoe guy, to get Penny to listen and say, listen, there's a way you can evolve and even maybe cut out some of the stuff that you can't control, this criticism that's bothering you. And clearly we saw it was bothering Penny this offseason. Small touches and changes that hopefully add up to the best version of Penny. A Penny that doesn't feel attacked. A Penny who more importantly understands, hey, media's got a job to do. Fans, when we're playing bad, they're going to say, they're going to be negative. But what I can do is give them the answers when they ask, right? Hey, this was on me. And more importantly, right? It's not personal. Understand that. And so if it's just been that part, Cobb, just little touches and getting Penny to open up and listen, getting Penny more comfortable, ultimately, you want the best version of Penny because that is best for the program itself, the basketball program, in terms of seeing what he can do with this thing. So, yeah, man, I think in small ways it appears, and Ed's made this point, and so has Tim Duncan, who's, you know, former teammate of Penny, a great guy to listen to. I think clearly we're seeing a different Penny Hardaway that's been recognized at over 50 years old. You know what? I want to evolve. And so, yeah, you know, small things right now, but I think that are leading to changes that have been good for the programs.
I think the other thing that you mentioned, when I think about how much more accessible, and it's not that Laird wasn't accessible, but, you know, hey, man, it was – I need to plug ticket sales. I'll come in and I'll do the show. You know, let me plug the ticket sales, and then you can ask me what you want. But it's like a phone interview. Well, the two times that Ed's been on the radio, he's come in the studio. Came in for Jeff, came in for y'all.
Yeah.
And the other thing that just it stands out to me, it's like, this is a smart strategy. Because number one, he is clearly an exceptional communicator. But in the end, like, his number one job is to instill confidence. It's smart because he's good on the air. You know what I mean? Like, that makes everyone feel better. Like, that instills confidence.
Well, you do that with the transparency, right?
Right.
He's got a common sense, common man approach that's going to serve him really well in Memphis, so long as you stick with that energy. Now what we've seen in a lot of cases, I mean, whether it's a coach or an AD, hey, you'll start out understanding that,
always.
Right? And then when that criticism comes, Jeffrey, you know it better than anybody. They're clamming up on you. You don't hear from them.
Or attacking.
I thought we had a great relationship. Actually, I was just, we're doing our job here like we expected you to do your job. And so often that goes the other way. Our hope, obviously, we seem to get that indication. I mean, first impression and all. But even after the interview, Ed stayed and talked, you know, with me and John afterwards out in the parking lot, and he gets it, certainly says he gets it from that standpoint, right? I know you guys, and he said it, y'all will kill me and Penny tonight if we lose to Tulane. Well, you're doggone right. That's how it goes. But so long as you guys stay transparent, well, my gosh, again, what about when things are going well? You're going to get that benefit as well. You've got a job to do. We've got a job to do. We'll see, again, if that energy stays the same. But I'm with you that, listen, in the end, you're talking to your people. Your job is to fundraise. I mean, yeah, we can say it's get Memphis in a bigger conference. That's out of your control. That's presidents, TV execs. His job is to raise funds. He talked about it. Getting more for Ryan Silverfield, who right now is probably got it as good as better than any Memphis coach in terms of resources. You know, he talked about getting more. That's Ed's job right now. And again, going back to what you talked about, his approach, the way he comes at you, the transparency. Yeah, I could see it leading to a lot of folks saying, you know what, I'm on board with this guy. I'm a, as he puts it, I'm a believer in what this can be under Dr. Ed Scott.
You think the basketball team found something against UAB, something that can be bottled up and applied throughout the rest of this conference schedule, whether it be Dane Danger in the starting lineup or you know what, P.J. Haggerty being so effective without, you know,
keep
really
shooting,
getting
keep
the
shooting 60% from three?
Well, yeah, but that's actually been shocking to me, Jason, the fact that Memphis has sustained the three-point shooting. Because in Maui, you're like, okay, then maybe they just like the gym or something, you know. But, man, they've shot the three-ball well all season. Now they're getting paint points out of danger at a high clip. I mean, do you think they found something here that is sustainable?
Yeah, obviously you want to bottle up the energy and the focus, right? You go from, what was it, 24 turnovers, something ungodly, six assists to, you know, kind of flipping that against UAB. But I'm kind of with you, Colin. I'm glad you said it. Hopefully what you can really bottle up, because you're going to have some games against some of these dregs of the AAC, and the focus is going to be down. But hopefully what you can bottle up and what was an adjustment, I think, maybe, you know, through the rest of this season can really help you, and especially in those first halves, is having Dane out there. I've said this on our show, and I'm sure, Cobb, you agree, covering college basketball as closely as you do. Having Dane out there early gives you three, almost four, really, offensive threats you've got to worry about in terms of game planning for Memphis. When you've got Musa Cisse out there starting, yes, defensive presence, but offensively, you don't have to game plan for Musa. And so it was giving teams an advantage just in terms of, okay, well, let's just, you know, Tyrese and PJ are the guys. And so some of that discombobulated offense, I think you were contributing to it in a way by not having Dane out there. Dane in this league, and we just saw it against one of the better bigs, if not the best big in the league, and Yoxel Lindeborg, can dominate. And so get, you know, and we saw it in that first half against UAB. You got him in there early, and that first half was just night and day difference than what we'd seen previously. And so I'm hoping that adjustment, Cobb, is getting them off to faster starts. I think it was the second best field goal. I know it was the second most assists in the Penny Hardaway tenure this previous game, and I want to tell you like the second best field goal percentage or something along those lines. Hopefully, Dane being in there, it makes them tougher to defend early. And for a Memphis team that struggled out of the gate offensively at times, and that's been what's cost them in some of them, I think this could really help. So I do, Cobb. I'm hopeful that that adjustment there is going to be actually something that propels them offensively, you know, after it looked really ugly. What was it, that Wichita State game, that first half?
All right, when you think about tonight's game with the Rockets, what comes to mind?
Statement game, and I know we, and yes, it's not a must win in the sense that there are 82 of these in the regular season, but in terms of as far as regular season games go, and the fact that, you know, this team has dominated you for the most part, for the better part of two of the three games, not to mention you were coming off your worst loss, an embarrassing loss of the season against the Knicks, you got to go out there and smash these guys. You got to go out there and at least make a statement to the point that, you know, whether it's getting Houston to believe that you ain't the, you know, that it hasn't conquered you already and it's you know, trajectory upwards, what EMA's done, or really just convincing yourself. Because as you pointed out, Jeffrey, man, the record against the top teams in the NBA, whether it's West or Eastern Conference, ain't so great. And so whether it's for your own belief or just hitting back at the Rockets, you have got to win tonight. It'd be great to see Ja Morant sort of get back to form these last four games, all of them under 20 points. And certainly that game against the Knicks, you deactivate Twitter after the 10-2, you know, and now you've got, you know, a sore shoulder. I'd love to believe Ja can come out here and deliver and sort of answer back and that be the lead of things. But whether he can or not, again, yes, when you get a great Ja Morant, you've typically got a great Grizzlies team, but this is on all of those guys. And it's also on Taylor Jenkins, to be honest with you. I mean, that's the other part of this. Your offense, you know, what you're running in terms of the amount of players you're playing and how you're playing your stars, yeah, it's working against the bad teams. And metrically, it looks good. It has not worked so far, for the most part, against the better ones. Realize there are the Boston game, Milwaukee. But Taylor Jenkins has got to find a way to get through to his team. And he's done this a couple times after Rockets losses. He's been frustrated because he said, those guys punked us. We got to push back. So hopefully you get the pushback on national TV. You don't want Charles and Ernie and those guys saying, well, this Grizz team in the end, you know, it's not good enough. They're too soft against the better teams in the league. Go ahead and handle them and get yourself back in hopefully the you know, where you've got the rest of the NBA saying, yeah, watch out for those Memphis Grizzlies. I think a win tonight goes a long way in doing that, both, you know, for yourself and for the rest of the league.
Jason, we appreciate it, buddy.
Y'all take care.
Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. I want to remind you that Zen Sports is rolling out the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for two more days. One grand prize winner win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game and $10,000 cash, or an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll still also have a shot to win one of five small prizes, which grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on the big game or $250 cash. Also, for all new customers who sign up with code JeffTN, you will receive 500 bonus entries in addition to the entries earned from the value of your qualifying bet. Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules, and you can earn a $100 no-danger first wager. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Terms and conditions do apply. We come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right, Cobb.
For today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. We got to go to Cam Newton. He was on First Take today, and when asked if he would trade his MVP award for a Super Bowl ring, Newton gave a firm no on First Take. What's more important, impact or championships? Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Respectfully, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. So is the other ones. Disrespectfully, I know that's not a popular pick. My take is I'm taking individual success because I did my job. He literally pulled out the Leon from the Budweiser campaigns of like the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, again, Leon can't do everything.
Sounds to me like Cam Newton needs to pick up golf or tennis.
There is something to be said for I was the best player in the league,
But it is also a team sport. Like, you're not playing for individual success.
That's right. That's why I say, what would Lamar Jackson say if asked the same question? Are we to believe that the Ravens are a flawed franchise because they can't win a Super Bowl with Lamar?
See, it'd be interesting. I guarantee you Lamar would trade one MVP for Super Bowls. I wonder if he would trade all of them.
But hey, first take, this, that's what it's for.
That's
it's
there.
For hot
that's,
takes.
Love it. That's a great tell your story. All right, buddy, we appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, man.
David Cobb of CBS Sports. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.